Jupiter has been studied longer than almost any other object in the sky. Galileo first pointed a telescope at it in the winter of 1610. For more than four centuries, astronomers have been staring at its creamy stripes and that one famous red eye, mapping its moons, tracing its storms, photographing it from every angle we could reach. Nine separate spacecraft have flown past it. One is still in orbit. You'd be forgiven for thinking that by now we know this planet inside and out, but we don't. Almost everything you were taught about Jupiter in school turns out to be wrong. It isn't made of gas. It wasn't built the way the textbooks describe. And underneath those familiar cloud bands lies a set of physics so extreme and so unlike anything on Earth that for almost all of human history, we had no way of knowing it was there. For 400 years, Jupiter has been hiding in plain sight. So what is actually inside it? How does a planet this big even form? And why does every computer simulation we run of the gas giant insist that it should look completely different from what we actually see? Join me as we crack open the biggest lie in the solar system, travel 20,000 kilometers down through the deepest ocean in existence, and reach for a core that, as far as we can tell, shouldn't physically be there. Before we go anywhere, let's try to sit with the sheer size of what we're dealing with. Jupiter is not just big, Jupiter is absurd. It contains more mass than every other planet in the solar system combined, and then doubled. 1,000 Earths could fit inside it. If you shrank our entire planet down to the size of a single grape, Jupiter would be a basketball sitting beside it. And yet, despite all that scale, Jupiter is surprisingly light for its size, much lighter than Earth, ounce for ounce, which already tells you something important about what's inside. For a planet to be this enormous but this light, the vast majority of its bulk has to be made of very low-density material. Something voluminous, something inflated, something, most people reasonably assumed, like gas. And this is where the whole story starts to go wrong. For most of the 20th century, we had two serious theories for how Jupiter formed, and until very recently, we had no way to pick between them. The first theory is the one you were probably taught. About 4.5 billion years ago, the Sun had just finished forming, and it was surrounded by a giant disk of rock, metal, gas, and dust, all swirling around it. Over millions of years, the stuff in that disk kept smashing together into bigger and bigger clumps. Gravity kicked in, the clumps pulled more material into themselves, and somewhere in the outer solar system, one clump got lucky. It grew big enough, fast enough, that its gravity started vacuuming up enormous quantities of gas from the disk around it. And it kept doing that for a very long time. Eventually, it became Jupiter. Under this theory, there has to be a solid core at the center of Jupiter, a dense ball of rock and iron, roughly the size of Earth, that provided the gravitational seed for everything else. The second theory is stranger. Under this version, Jupiter didn't form inside the Sun's disk at all. It formed separately as a giant, cold cloud of gas floating just outside the young solar system that slowly collapsed under its own gravity. Basically, the same way a star forms, only this cloud wasn't quite big enough to ignite. So instead of becoming a second sun, it collapsed into a planet. At some point, it drifted close enough to the Sun to get captured in orbit, and it's been there ever since. Under this second theory, Jupiter wouldn't really have a solid core at all. It would just be a kind of layer cake of gas all the way down. Two completely different origin stories, two completely different planets. And for most of human history, we had no way to tell which was right, because the clouds of Jupiter are too thick to see through. The one thing we needed to know what's actually inside was the one thing we couldn't check. Until, by sheer luck, the universe arranged a demonstration. Then, in 1994, something hit Jupiter. For a brief window in human history, the single most convenient accident in the history of planetary science happened by pure coincidence. Right at the moment, we had the exact equipment to witness it. The object's name was Comet Shoemaker-Levy 9. A frozen chunk of ice and rock hurtling through the solar system at 216,000 kilometers an hour on a collision course with Jupiter. we had only discovered it the year before, and by the time we caught sight of it, Jupiter's immense gravity had already shattered the comet into pieces. At least 21 fragments, stretched out in a line like pearls on a broken necklace, all of them aimed directly at the planet. The largest piece was around 2 kilometers across. For context, the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs was around 10 kilometers across, 5 times larger. But it was also traveling much more slowly, and it hit a planet very much smaller than Jupiter. Shoemaker-Levy 9 was a different class of event entirely, and for the first time in recorded history, we were going to watch a major planetary collision happen live. Except there was a problem. The impact site was on Jupiter's far side, hidden from every telescope on Earth. The biggest planetary collision we have ever had a chance to observe was about to happen, and we were about to completely miss it. And then the coincidence gets almost unbelievable. At the exact same time this once-in-6,000-year event was happening, NASA just happened to have a spacecraft in the final stages of approaching Jupiter. Its name was Galileo. It had been traveling through the solar system for 6 years, on a mission that had been planned long before Shoemaker-Levy 9 was even discovered. Galileo's scheduled arrival at Jupiter in December 1995 meant that, by total accident, it had a perfect front-row view of the side of the planet that Earth could not see. This is the sort of astronomical luck that does not happen. Over 6 days in July 1994, Galileo watched 21 separate collisions slam into Jupiter's far side. The largest of them released energy equivalent to roughly 300 million atomic bombs. It remains the biggest single explosion ever recorded by humanity. As Jupiter rotated, the scars came into view from Earth. The Hubble Space Telescope, freshly serviced and perfectly aligned, captured black bruises punched into the cloud layer, each one larger than our entire planet. Plumes of debris, thousands of kilometers high, lingered above the surface for months. And crucially, the impacts kicked material out from under the clouds. The insides of Jupiter, the deep atmosphere, the stuff we had never been able to see, were now exposed, scattered across the upper atmosphere, just waiting for a spacecraft to fly through. When Galileo passed through that debris a year later on its way into orbit, it took the first direct sample humanity had ever collected of the interior of Jupiter. And what the probe found, nobody was expecting. It was water, a lot of water. This was genuinely strange. The cloud layer we could already see and measure was made almost entirely of hydrogen and helium. There shouldn't have been this much water hiding underneath, which meant that either our models of the planet were badly wrong, or the water was coming from somewhere much deeper down, or both. Whatever it meant, it pointed to the same conclusion, the textbook picture of Jupiter, a simple layered ball of gases, was incomplete. Possibly completely wrong. Something was happening beneath those clouds that we didn't yet have the instruments to see. So, a few years later, NASA started designing a follow-up mission built specifically to crack the planet open. That mission was named Juno, which is a nice little piece of mythology. In the old Roman stories, Juno was the wife of the god Jupiter, and the one person who could see through the veil of clouds her husband used to hide behind. The spacecraft launched in 2011, arrived at Jupiter in 2016, and has been in orbit around the planet ever since, sending back the most detailed measurements of a gas giant's interior ever collected. Essentially, everything in the rest of this video comes from Juno. Let's actually go down through the planet now, start at the top. The outermost layer of Jupiter is a weather system unlike anything on Earth. The temperature at the cloud tops is below minus 100 degrees Celsius, colder than anywhere on our planet has ever been. Up there, water ice crystals are mixed with ammonia, which acts as a natural antifreeze, allowing liquid water to exist alongside frozen water and swirling gas all at once in one gigantic churning mess of chemistry. As droplets collide with ice crystals in those high clouds, the atmosphere becomes electrically charged. The result is lightning storms on a scale nothing on Earth can match. Bolts of electricity 1,000 times more powerful than anything our planet has ever produced, flashing continuously across regions larger than entire continents. Eventually, the super-chilled water and ammonia mixture clumps together into slushy hailstones, which fall into the warmer layers below, melt into rain, evaporate, and rise back up to start the whole cycle over again. And towering above all of this, the single most recognizable feature of any planet in our solar system is the Great Red Spot. You already know the Red Spot. Everyone does. It's that distinctive red-brown oval painted onto the side of Jupiter, the one feature of the planet visible from even the cheapest backyard telescope. What you might not know is the scale of it. The Great Red Spot is a single storm, thousands of kilometers across, that has been raging continuously for at least 190 years, and possibly much longer. Unlike a storm on Earth, which sits flat against the surface, the Red Spot has depth. It reaches down hundreds of kilometers into the atmosphere of Jupiter, and it also reaches up, punching above the rest of the cloud layer, into regions that are more directly exposed to the sun's ultraviolet light. That extra UV radiation breaks apart chemical compounds in the storm and produces the deep rust-red color we see from Earth. Imagine a single cloud 10 times taller than Mount Everest and 10 times deeper than the ocean. That still doesn't quite capture the scale of the Great Red Spot. But here is the part almost nobody mentions, as dramatic as all of this weather looks. The lightning, the storms, the Red Spot. The entire cloud layer of Jupiter is only about 50 kilometers deep. 50 kilometers, roughly the distance from London to Brighton. Everything you have ever seen of Jupiter, through any telescope, anywhere in history, is essentially a 50-kilometer thick coat of paint on a planet 140,000 kilometers across. That's less than 0.04% of the planet's radius. So what is underneath? That's where the real Jupiter lives. As we descend below the clouds, the temperature starts to rise. This might sound backwards. You'd think going deeper means moving further from the sun and getting colder. But Jupiter's heat doesn't come from the outside. It comes from pressure. The mass of the planet is so enormous that its own gravity is crushing everything inside it inward. And when you compress molecules, you concentrate their energy. The deeper you go, the tighter the squeeze, and the higher the temperature. It's like walking into thicker and thicker fog. Except the fog isn't water vapor. The fog is hydrogen, the lightest element in the universe. In Jupiter's gravity well, every heavier element has already been pulled downward toward the center of the planet. Only hydrogen is light enough to stay afloat in the upper regions, and the deeper you go, the more the hydrogen around you is compressed. At around 1,000 kilometers below the cloud layer, something extraordinary happens. The hydrogen stops being a gas. It turns into a liquid. Not because it's cold. By this point, the temperature has climbed into the thousands of degrees. It turns into a liquid because the pressure is so extreme that it has pushed hydrogen's boiling point impossibly high. On Earth, hydrogen boils at minus 253 degrees Celsius. You have to make it unbelievably cold to keep it liquid at all. Inside Jupiter, the situation is completely reversed. The pressure is so severe that hydrogen stays liquid, even at well over 1,000 degrees. And once you cross that threshold, you are standing at the shore of something no creature in our solar system has ever seen in person, an ocean of liquid hydrogen. It is the largest ocean that exists anywhere in the solar system, possibly anywhere we know of. 20,000 kilometers deep, 2,000 times the depth of the deepest trench on Earth, hot, dense, crushing, and made entirely of a single element. So technically, Jupiter isn't a gas giant at all. It's a liquid one. But even this isn't the weirdest thing about the inside of the planet. As you continue down into the hydrogen ocean, the pressure keeps climbing. The heat keeps climbing. And somewhere around halfway to the center of the planet, you reach a region where both have exceeded anything humans have ever recreated in a laboratory. Millions of times Earth's atmospheric pressure, temperatures of 10,000 degrees Celsius, hotter than the surface of the sun. And in that environment, hydrogen does something nobody predicted until the 20th century. It becomes a metal, not a solid metal. The ocean is still a liquid. It doesn't freeze. But the pressure down here is so brutal that the electrons get squeezed clean out of their atoms, they come loose. they start flowing freely through the liquid, the same way they flow through a copper wire. That is the defining property of a metal. So what you have in the middle of Jupiter is a 40,000 kilometer thick layer of liquid metallic hydrogen, an ocean of something that behaves simultaneously like mercury in a thermometer and like the wiring of an electrical device. It is a material that does not naturally exist anywhere else in our solar system. And that liquid metal is what gives Jupiter its one other record-breaking feature. The most powerful magnetic field of any planet in our solar system, 20,000 times stronger than Earth's. Big enough that, if our eyes could see it, Jupiter's magnetosphere would appear in our sky larger than the full moon, despite being nearly 600 million kilometers away at its closest approach. All of it generated by this one impossible layer. By the time you've descended 40,000 kilometers through the metallic ocean, you have traveled through something that has no analog anywhere else we can point a telescope. Not on Earth, not on any of the other planets, not on any moon, nowhere. And at the very bottom of everything, you reach the final mystery, the core. For decades, the assumption had been that Jupiter's core was a compact, dense ball of rock and iron, roughly the size of the planet Earth, sitting right at the center. This was what the mainstream formation theory predicted. The seed, the original clump of rock that vacuumed up all the gas, it had to still be there. When Juno started measuring Jupiter's gravitational field in detail, it was looking for that ball. It didn't find one. What Juno found instead was something that, frankly, shouldn't exist. The core of Jupiter is what scientists now call fuzzy. That's not poetic language. It's the actual technical term being used in the research papers. Instead of a clean, solid boundary between the liquid metal layer and a rocky center, the planet's interior gradually mixes together. Rock, iron, liquid metal hydrogen, heavy elements, all of it blending into a dense soup with no clean edge between where one state of matter ends and another begins. And the fuzzy core is enormous. It spans roughly half of Jupiter's entire radius. In other words, something like 70,000 kilometers of Jupiter's interior is this weird boundaryless mixture. This shouldn't be here. Cores are supposed to settle. Heavy elements sink to the center. Lighter elements float upward. Over time, you end up with clean, layered structure. That's what Earth has. That's what the Moon has. That's what every earlier model of Jupiter also predicted. So how did Jupiter end up with this enormous, blurred-together mess in the middle? The leading theory right now is bizarre. Shortly after Jupiter formed, within the first few million years of the solar system's existence, it may have been hit by something enormous. Not an asteroid, not a comet, a full planet, roughly 10 times the mass of Earth, smashing directly into a young Jupiter at interplanetary speeds. An impact like that would have delivered enough energy to completely shatter Jupiter's original solid core and scatter its contents throughout the planet's interior. Rock, iron, heavy elements, all of it blown outward, mixed into the hydrogen ocean, never to reassemble. That's the theory, and it elegantly explains what Juno is seeing today. A fuzzy core is exactly what you'd expect if a planet's core had been catastrophically shattered in the distant past. Except, there is a problem with this theory too. When researchers actually ran computer simulations of the collision, dozens of different scenarios, with rocky planets of different sizes and compositions slamming into a young Jupiter, they got the right answer at first. The collision produced a fuzzy core. The simulation was working. Then they let the simulation keep running for a few million years of simulated time, just to see what would happen. And in every single case, the fuzzy core slowly settled. The scattered debris drifted back toward the center. The heavy elements sank, clean layers reformed. Within a relatively short time by astronomical standards, the planet's interior went back to looking the way it was supposed to look. A solid core, surrounded by cleanly organized layers. In every simulation, without exception, the fuzzy core isn't supposed to survive. And yet, 4.5 billion years after the early solar system, Juno is looking at Jupiter right now, today, and it is still seeing a fuzzy core. We do not know why. Let's zoom out. We have been observing Jupiter for more than four centuries. we have sent 9 spacecraft to the planet. Juno is in orbit right now, sending us more precise measurements than any space agency has ever collected about a gas giant. And we still cannot answer 3 very basic questions. We don't know which of the 2 formation theories is correct. We don't know why there is so much water hiding beneath the clouds. And we don't know how Jupiter's core, by every simulation we can run, should no longer be fuzzy, but stubbornly, undeniably is. This isn't because we haven't tried. It isn't because scientists aren't clever enough. It's because Jupiter is a genuinely hard problem. The physics of its interior involves pressures, temperatures, and materials that we cannot create in a laboratory. We cannot hold metallic hydrogen in our hands. We cannot stand on Jupiter's surface because there isn't one. The only way we can study this planet is by measuring it from orbit and then running simulations that keep disagreeing with what we measure. And here is why it matters. Jupiter is not just a weird planet sitting in our backyard. Jupiter is the template. More than half of the exoplanets we have discovered so far, the ones orbiting other stars, are gas giants. As far as we can tell, the vast majority of the universe's planetary mass is locked up in worlds that look something like Jupiter. If we don't understand Jupiter, we don't understand most planets. Figuring out how this one planet formed and what is happening inside it is how we start to understand how planetary systems work anywhere in the galaxy, including our own. Juno's mission has now been extended through 2025. After that, there is currently no dedicated Jupiter probe scheduled. The next missions, JUICE and Europa Clipper, arrive in the early 2030s, but they are primarily focused on the icy moons, not on the planet itself. For the foreseeable future, the biggest world in our solar system remains a 400-year-old unsolved case. I opened this video by telling you that Jupiter has been studied longer than almost any other object in the sky, that Galileo first looked at it in 1610, and that we have been staring at its stripes and its red eye for 4 centuries. All of that is true. But what I didn't tell you at the start is that for every single one of those 400 years, what we were staring at was a lie. A 50-kilometer thick coat of paint over something far stranger underneath. An ocean of boiling metal. A core that shouldn't physically be there. And a formation story we still cannot explain, all hidden behind a perfectly innocent-looking marble in the night sky. Every photograph you have ever seen of Jupiter, every telescope observation, every famous image going back to the 17th century, all of it is the surface of the deception. The real Jupiter is underneath, and after 400 years of trying, we have only just begun to read it. Thanks for watching.